On this episode of Mistake by the Take, Jake and Dylan look at the firing of JB Bickerstaff, as well as the possibility of keeping the core four together. Then, current state of the Guardians, Browns OTAs, and a little news on Scottie Scheffler. All that and more coming up on a brand new episode of Mistake by the Take.
One, two!
Episode 32 of Mistake by the Take. Jake Volnick, Dylan Feltovich, with our like ninth return from a break at this point. But we're back. We're here.
We're back.
We're ready to roll. Dylan, can people actually expect consistent content this time?
Yes, I believe so. I think that now that school is over, summer is out, and with the ability of doing this on YouTube as well, it makes it a lot easier for us to be able to post this content and just be able to do it on Zoom, because we don't have to go to the undisclosed location each time, which was kind of a bitch for all of us. But either way, though, I think this is going to be a lot easier for us, especially to getting out content, not just on these platforms, on YouTube and, like, you know, Spotify and stuff. I think it also helps to be able to get some content on social media as well. So, big play by us. Pat on the back.
Yeah.
You know.
Make sure we go ahead and do that. Yeah, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you hit the bell as well. Mistake by the Take. Can't miss it. This will be the first episode uploaded on there. So, episode 32 and every episode on from there will be also on YouTube if you care to look at our ugly faces.
It took us 32 episodes, which is kind of crazy, but, you know, we figured it out.
Yeah, eventually got there, you know. And
yeah.
We're pretty talented.
I talked to a couple people, too, about just, like, trying to figure out YouTube as well and, you know, the algorithm there. And I think it's definitely something that we were trying to expand on for the longest time. And I think we finally got a good combination to try to put it together.
There we go. That's the right move we got. We got video coming. We'll have more content on the social medias. We'll be rolling. Also, slight change to the programming. Once a week, which is hopefully the consistent content you can expect, but we're covering anything that happens in the Cleveland sports scene within that week. Not the specific episodes where you feel, you know, full Guardians, full Cavs. If something happens, we're not going to miss it. We're going to cover it in that episode. It'll be there. You'll probably get a majority. Like today, you're probably going to have, you know, main focus is going to be Cavs and everything that's been going on with JB Bickerstaff, as well as Kobe Altman speaking on the day of this recording this morning here on Friday. So you guys will be able to tune in for everything. You won't have to hope, and then maybe we just don't get to what you wanted to hear about, and you get to hear it next week.
Yeah, and I also think, too, then that gives us the ability to do a lot of other social media content with, you know, I know a couple episodes ago, it was, I forget the when it was, but we did like the top 10 QBs and stuff like that. I think that would be more of just shortened videos that you could find on our social media pages. I know we do a lot of stuff sometimes where we will just record like shorts like that as well. So it at least gives us the ability to do that too. So definitely liking the direction that we're heading in right now.
Yeah. And even if you're just like enjoying the podcast and you're saying, oh, why am I going to go on YouTube? I'm not ever going to watch it. Probably more content coming that way, too. You know, you might get extended videos based on things that we didn't talk about in the pod. Maybe some national stuff. Maybe we transition, start playing some games that you can find, you know, something to keep your interest as well.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe Jake and I will once return to a place that we can both film. Who knows? We'll see. Potentially.
Yeah. Well, you know.
It wouldn't be the undisclosed location. I would probably talk about said location. So who knows?
Yeah, definitely. But let's get into the episode. Wanting to kick it off, of course, talking about the Cavs and the major move that they made this week, which was the dismissal, as they'll put it, aka the firing of J.B. Bickerstaff. Gone, out, there'll be a new coach coming in, and I think this one was sort of writing on the wall and we all expected it.
Yeah, I definitely think that this was going to happen. I mean, this has been the buzz for a couple years now about when J.B. Bickerstaff would be eventually canned, and I think now was kind of the time of the decision there. And I mean, it was definitely, like you said, writing was on the wall.
Yeah, there is no other way to go. It's like, we're happy with this decision too, right? Like, I don't think JB did a bad job, right? He progressed every single year he was here. You can't get mad. His first year, he didn't do anything while he was here, you know, in terms of the team. And then they make the play-in, they make the playoffs, and of course get embarrassed by the Knicks. And then you finally win a playoff series this year. You can look at that and say, oh, he was making improvements every year. Why would you get rid of him? But at the same time, I think he had lost the locker room at this point. I don't think it was everything that you needed it to be. I don't think everybody was fully bought into where they wanted to be. And if you're going to actually make a change and look to take a massive leap with this team and contend for a title, it didn't feel like it was going to be under J.B. Bickerstaff.
Yeah, and you made a couple good points when we talked on WJCU. You know, we do like a streaks talking sports kind of thing, and you said that there was two kind of avenues that you would want to look for in a coach, and that's either they have a good scheme, you know, talk about like, you know, back in the day, triangle offense and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Greg Popovich with the motion offense, stuff like that.
Yeah, so you don't tend to see that much in this generation of the NBA, just because obviously with the amount of star power and just how the game is evolving, like it's hard to implement a game plan there rather than just telling your best players, hey, go drop 50 a night. Like it's starting to become more common to see that. And so you either have that or you have someone that could be a very good motivator. And I feel like J.B. Bickerstaff really didn't have either or. And, you know, the problem that I kind of had too, and I ended up talking to, this was funny, I talked to Jake about this. I was talking to a professor at John Carroll, and we were just discussing, you know, I mean, we were talking about other stuff originally with, you know, in my world. And then he's a guy too that I like to talk about sports with and stuff. So we were talking about the Cavs, and he made a great point, honestly, in the fact that like the development for a couple of players was needed, and it kind of falls on him for not developing them. Because I automatically think of guys like Darius Garland. Like, yes, obviously he needed to kind of, he had that one year where he exploded. You know, he went from the worst player in the league to one of the best. And then you also have guys like Evan Mobley as well that you're trying to develop there, Isaac Okoro that you draft, and these guys that need to step up into huge spots, they weren't really developed enough to be able to take on that role. I think of like Evan Mobley trying to be able to take outside perimeter shots. Like he wasn't able to do that, and he wasn't able to grow in that. You know, you needed Isaac Okoro to be more of a guy that could play on offense as well. Great defender. However, the offense kind of made him a liability whenever he was out on the floor then. And I just think that it was a failure by J.B. Bickerstaff to not be able to develop those guys. And if you're going to go and find a new coach, that's going to probably be the key moving forward, is finding a guy that could develop them and make them into the guys that you need them to be in order to succeed.
Yeah, it's a big balance, right? You have to be able to develop your young stars in Evan Mobley and Darius Garland. You need them to be productive. And you also need to also be putting it together a team that's competing right now, right? You can't just scrap the idea of, hey, we're going to go out and win because we just want to develop Evan Mobley into a star and we want to make sure he gets all of his reps. No, you still have Donovan Mitchell. You still have a good cast around this team. You still want to win playoff games. You need somebody who's going to go in there and do it all at the same time and somehow make that work. I don't think it's an easy job, but it's certainly not the worst job in the NBA that's going to be opening up this offseason.
No, and it's definitely not too hard. It's just, like I've said before, it's a puzzle that you're trying to fit the pieces in and try to work around. You have a ton of talent. That's not the reason why you didn't succeed. You have two great guards You have two great big men. You have a couple of key bench players as well, too. Like, the pieces are there to succeed. That's the problem that, I mean, it's just hard to even, like, comprehend and figure out that, like, how are you not succeeding and how are you underperforming each year? And that's what it ultimately comes down to, is if you can be able to find a guy that's able to put together the pieces, I think that's going to be huge for you. Because I mean, as much as I would want to see some changes happen with, you know, player personnel and stuff, I don't necessarily think that it's going to maybe happen, you know, if you do move off of some of these guys. Like, if you could keep all of them, that'd be awesome. I mean, if you, and then be able to have them succeed as well, like, you got a home run and you could potentially be contending for a title at that point. Like, I don't think that's absurd to say. You see other teams that have been able to do that, like the Celtics. They have found a way to get a bunch of talent and then have a mesh. Like, it's not impossible. So I think that it's just going to be coming down to ultimately figuring out who the next head coach will be and implementing what plan that he wants that is able to succeed in the NBA and be able to take this team to the next level.
All right, so let's talk about that guy. One guy you have to come in here. Obviously, we're early in the search. The Cavs truly haven't even began a true coaching search. But if there's one guy out of the available head coaches, who'd you bring in for this team?
So obviously it's pretty early, but I think one name that's really sticking out in that, I mean, is already kind of in the buzz that I've seen a couple of articles being posted about and stuff. Kenny Atkinson, He is currently the assistant. Yeah, as I knew Jake would be pretty upset with that one, but he's currently the assistant coach for the Golden State Warriors. He started out his career with Mike D'Antoni in New York, and he was there for a while there. And then eventually his only head coaching role was with the Nets before. And that was actually before when they got KD and Kyrie Irving there. So the roster wasn't necessarily good. I think there's a couple reasons why he would be the correct choice for us. One, he already kind of has been in a culture that has succeeded in terms of looking at a team like the Golden State Warriors. They ended up winning in 2022. And he was an assistant coach for them. I think also on top of that, you have the ability to he can develop guys. Like, that's where I'm looking at it from, because you need to be able to develop those guys that I said before, you know, Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro, Evan Mobley. I think that he'd do a great job of that. I think he also fits into the analytics that the Cavaliers kind of like to play into a little bit. I think that would be huge. And also, too, he was the head coach for the Nets when you had two guys on the Cavs on that roster, Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, who are big-time players for us. So the way that I look at it is, like, you kind of have the chemistry a little bit in that sense. You also have a guy that could develop some of your players. He already has a championship under his belt, technically. I know he was an assistant coach there. I don't necessarily blame his kind of thoughts about everything that went down with the Nets, since that was kind of just a mess all around. So in my opinion, I think that that's probably one of the biggest names that I'm looking at right now. Again, it's pretty early into it. I want to be able to kind of see more guys that are potentially buzzing in order to kind of figure it out a little bit. But I think that's probably the big name that's sticking out to me right now.
So my problem with Kenny Atkinson is that, one, I don't think he was put into a very good spot when he was a head coach prior, when he was with the Nets. Like, that team was absolute garbage. We can just be fair and say that entirely. But my problem with Kenny Atkinson is you're not getting a proven commodity. You're not getting a guy who turned that Nets team into something great, right? They were okay at times, but they were never very good. And again, the roster was not there. That's fine. But look what the Cavs ended up getting Jared Allen. Like, it was a bag of chips. They had to give up nothing in order to get Jared Allen, which tells me that Kenny Atkinson, probably not utilizing the talents of one of, in my opinion, the better bigs in the NBA right now, at least true big, right? I'm not putting him up there with like Nikola Jokic, Giannis. No, he's not there. But I would probably say he's in a tier below those guys, or maybe one below that. He's still good in this league. He was an all-star 2 years ago with the Cavs. But Kenny Atkinson didn't exactly utilize him to his full potential in my mind, which is why I would look elsewhere. A name that stands out to me that I really like, James Borrego. Borrego lasted the Hornets in 2021-2022. They were over 500. And you want to talk about making a bad roster somehow look good? Outside of LaMelo Ball, we've watched these Hornets teams. They've had nobody. Like, absolutely nobody. They've been absolute garbage. And Borrego does something that the Cavs need incredibly bad. He has an offensive system, an offensive-minded coach, where he was turning a team that wasn't very good offensively into a team who was scoring a lot of points. And if you take that in combo, if you can kind of keep that mentality that J.B. Bickerstaff installed, which was defense first, and guys are going to go out and play hard, play defensively, if they keep that kind of chip on their shoulder and then are able to bring in what James Borrego does offensively, I think this team looks 10 times scarier.
Yeah, I've seen Borrego kind of pop up as a couple other names that are potentially going to be in the mix for it. I don't necessarily hate it. I think in terms of looking at a guy that has, I guess, the resume that you could say, you're not going to really find a resume guy like this. It's usually going to be a case where you're going to have to find maybe like an assistant coach that gets promoted kind of thing. Like it's going to be tough to find someone that has a resume,
right? Your resume guy got signed or hired already. That's Mike Budenholzer. That's your only resume guy,
right? Like, I don't think this is going to be a guy that's going to be able to be like, you know, absolute slam dunk no matter what. Like there's no way that that's going to be possible. And that's going to be the case for any team that's going to be moving off of a head coach. Like that's just how it is. And the way that I look at it then is like, you know, Borrego, you talked about it. He's going to bring in an offensive system. I just worry about how is Donovan Mitchell going to be kind of involved in that? Like, is he going to be able to say like, hey, I'm willing to take a step back and, you know, maybe not take as many shots? Or is he going to be frustrated with that? Because the thing is, like, the NBA is a league where it is player dominated. Like, it compared to the NFL, where it is mostly like owners, GMs, that one's mainly going to be that power dynamic. But in the NBA, you have the player dynamic where you could, if you're a star player, you could get your head coach fired automatically. And I worry, because my thing is, I want Donovan Mitchell with this team for the long haul, no matter what. I think he's the best player on the team easily. And you're going to have to find someone that's willing to be able to gel with that and not necessarily take away from him, and more of honestly just letting him do his own thing. So I don't know if Borrego would necessarily be that guy then. I wouldn't mind it, especially too if he comes in here. Again, you talked about the resume. I think it's a lot better than a lot of these guys, considering that, you know, you take a team like the Hornets to be over 500. That's pretty impressive, to say the least. But overall, like, is he going to be able to deal with how the puzzle pieces are going to fit? That's my main concern, because again, that's going to be the big thing moving forward, is figuring out how to be able to put this team together, since it sounds like there may not be moving off of the guys that we think that they could be.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility with the comments that we heard today from Kobe Altman. A couple other names that I just want to get out of the way really quick before we get to those comments. Luke Walton, if I hear this one again out of Cleveland fans, I'm going to lose my mind. He's an assistant coach with the Cavs right now, or at least he was this last season. They dumped a ton of the assistants. I'm not sure Walton was on that list or not. He's got a record of 166-241, guys, as a head coach. And you know what? 39-4 That was the start he had with the Warriors in 2015, 2016, when he was filling in for Steve Kerr because Kerr had that back surgery. So you take out those numbers, it looks a whole lot worse for Luke Walton. He hasn't done anything. He's never had a team go over 500 otherwise when he was a head coach. And then he was with the Kings up until 2019, 2020, somewhere around there. They were bad. He leaves, they get good. It was that simple. It was less than a year change, and the Kings were looking like one of the better teams in the NBA. So he's out. Sam Cassell's the name. He's an assistant with Boston right now. Obviously, former NBA player. He has no head coaching experience. That just seems like a little bit of a risk to me. Trying to bring in a guy who's never done it at the top level and then trying to put together this intricate puzzle that we're talking about. I'm not sure that I love going Cassell, who doesn't have that experience yet. And the last name that stuck out to me that was kind of interesting, Dave Yeager. I know if you go and look like odds of who the coaches or who the Cavs are going to hire, he's well towards the bottom now, but he's had a relationship with the Cavs front office. And then he was with that Grizzlies team who were kind of studs back in the mid 2010s, like 2013, 2014. And he had some success elsewhere. So that's another guy. But again, he walked into a pretty good situation over there. I don't know what Yeager still got. He hasn't been a head coach in a long time, but forget the Luke Walton thing. Can we get rid of that? Can we just, no,
I think you could get rid of most of these guys that were successful in the NBA that are transitioning into a coaching role. I think that works for teams that just kind of need someone to stand in there, because like, I think of like the Warriors, like, do they didn't need, to be honest with you, they probably didn't even need a head coach at that time. Like, don't get me wrong. Steve Kerr, one of the best coaches of all time. I definitely agree with that. That's not the thing, but you went 39-4 with Luke Walton. Like, if Luke Walton wasn't there, I'm fully convinced that they still could have at least put up that same record.
Yeah, pretty close to it, right?
Yeah. I don't think that the player, former player, like, you know, as much as I love Steve Nash, but like the Jason Kidd, Steve Nash kind of thing, you don't really want to look for that. You know, you don't have a LeBron James. You don't have a Steph Curry. You don't have a Kevin Durant where it's, you know, you could go and have them play the whole game and they're dropping 40 bombs every week. Like, you just don't have that that dynamic with the team. You need a guy that has a little bit of a coaching resume to him and has at least shown that he has an ability to at least motivate or develop guys or implement a scheme.
Yeah, no doubt. So that would take like JJ Redick off your radar, for instance.
Yeah. JJ Redick, I feel like that would be, he'd be good for like coaching a team like with LeBron, but like I don't think that, don't get me wrong, I think JJ Redick is a very smart individual in terms of basketball IQ. He wouldn't have been successful in the NBA if it weren't for his high IQ. I know he had an absolute strap, but it also helps that he has a high IQ. So I think he's a very intelligent basketball mind there, but I don't necessarily know that he would be able to help out this team in the long run.
Yeah, this team needs a lot of direction, essentially. So that's why, again, I'm going back to guys who have done it previously, who have shown that they've done it at the top level as a head coach. That's nothing against Sam Cassell in the same aspect. You've been an assistant coach for, over a decade. I just don't think I can take that risk of a guy who's never been, you know, top dog in a coaching staff. I need somebody who's going to go in. Yeah. Let's get into these comments by Kobe Altman today. So he sat up in front of the media, answered all their questions. Essentially, it's their closing interview before the end of the season, you know, quote unquote, end of the season. Obviously they've been done for a couple of weeks now, but it's basically their exit interview as, you know, president of basketball operations. There's some comments that are driving me, you know, up a wall on these. One of them being, and it's an interesting one, Kobe says, I don't see us making major super changes. I just don't. You can't make it to a conference semifinals and say, this doesn't work. First off, is Kobe bluffing? Like, is this just kind of to make sure we keep the ground kind of flat and not rile any feathers on his exit interview before he's not going to talk to the media again?
Well, it could be bluff, but at the same time, too, let's think about Cleveland sports in general. When's the last time that you could say they made drastic moves in any type of offseason?
Like, I would argue
complete overhaul.
I would argue going and getting Donovan Mitchell is a pretty big move, right?
Yeah, but
2 years ago,
multiple different moves. Multiple.
Yeah, I mean, aside from, I mean, maybe a look to the Browns, but that's obviously a much bigger roster. So,
and that one was literally just, you could say, Deshaun Watson and Amari Cooper. Like, that was it. Cleveland is just not known for being a city that overhauls any type of team in the offseason. Like, that's just how it is. We're not a big market team. We're not going to be, we don't have the appeal to bring in a huge name or completely overhaul. The only way that we were able to necessarily do that was with LeBron, because LeBron is at least, I don't want to start the Jordan versus LeBron argument or anything like that. He's at least top two all time. So I wouldn't be surprised then if this is actually true, though, because in a way he's kind of right, where when you have this roster, you don't want to necessarily lose all these guys that have been a critical piece to getting you to where you're all right now. Because, I mean, if you think about the LeBron era after it, the teams were awful.
Yeah, they're decimated.
You never saw them making any chances to be in the playoffs for that. Yeah. And so now you have a chance post-LeBron era to step up and be consistent playoff contenders. I don't necessarily think it's crazy to say that he won't make a ton of moves, because maybe he does move off of one guy that everyone's been talking about. Maybe it's like a Darius Garland, or maybe, if you know, it could be like Jared Allen, for example. Who knows? Like, maybe he moves off of one of them. But to say that he makes a complete overhaul, I don't necessarily think it's true. I think that he's trying to look for probably a guy and a head coach that'll be able to get all these pieces to gel in order to take them to the promised land. So I don't necessarily think, I mean, maybe it could be a little bit of bluff to kind of help out the trade market for some of these guys, like a Darius Garland, who has that huge contract, which makes a ton of sense. But at the same time, too, it could just be true. I don't necessarily think that it's crazy to say that they wouldn't move off of anyone in terms of player personnel. They got him this far. And I'm not necessarily supporting that, but I'm just saying that it could definitely be a possibility.
We've seen this core function, the core four function, for 2 years now. You and I can look at it and say, Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell have not worked well on the court together at all. Evan Mobley and Jared Allen haven't worked very well on the court together.
I agree. And that's the thing. I'm in that stance too, where you probably do need to make some changes. However, I don't think it's a very Cleveland-esque thing to be able to move off of these guys.
Well, you know what else isn't a Cleveland-esque thing? Winning titles. Not very Cleveland-esque. So maybe there should be some change happening. Maybe we shouldn't be sticking to the classic Cleveland team narrative of not making big changes. The NBA is a salary cap league. This is not the MLB, where you can't go out and make those massive changes because you don't have the funds to. Every team has the funds to. We know Dan Gilbert has the funds to go out and make changes for this team. He's shown that he will do it. I don't see the benefit in keeping both of those groups together and running it all the way back. Step number one, get a new head coach in there, right? Because ultimately, if he's like, hey, I'd rather have, you know, I think I can make these two bigs work, whatever. I can deal with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. I can develop an outside shot on Evan. We'll be good. We'll make this work. Great. Then you can scrap away with getting rid of those two guys this year. But aside from that, I don't know any coach that's going to go, 2 6'1" guards, don't play very well defensively, both kind of dominant ball handlers. Yeah, give me them both. I love having those two guys in the lineup together. Like, that just doesn't happen.
It hasn't happened throughout the whole entire league. That's the other thing, too. Like, every other team.
Like, history of the NBA.
Look at the Suns. Yeah. They have so many guys that can shoot and drop 30 points on a nightly basis. And it didn't work out there.
No, because all three of those guys need the ball. I look at this. And right, we're a playoff contending team. We won a playoff series, our first one without LeBron since he came into the league. But you can't be complacent. You can't sit there and be like, hey, this playoff thing's pretty cool. Well, I mean, keep these four together. They'll at least get us there every year, right? I think that's no doubt. Even if they don't function well together, there's enough talent sitting on this roster and talent between those four guys. You're going to be in the playoffs. There's no chance you're missing the playoffs. That's great. The problem is, I don't think any four of those guys are satisfied sitting right there and being, all right, we made it. They want to go out and win the thing. And if you're going to do that, you can't sit around and watch this core four who has struggled to function together, who has proven it incapable to function together in their current state, and just run it right back. I think getting a coach in there first is the most important thing. If he thinks he can do it, then maybe we should let him. But as it stands right now, before you have that coach in there, being the president of basketball operations saying, I don't think we're going to make changes, I hate that.
Well, and here's the other thing that you do have to consider as well on top of that. The timeline with all of this is going to be very important. Because if you think about it, you got to be able to figure out the head coaching spot, figure out the system that he wants to implement, then find the suitor, and then figure out a potential trade, and you have a very short amount of time.
Which, by the way, you have to do this all before, you know, if like the Pelicans would be interested in Darius Garland, you have to do that all before the Pelicans go out and get another point guard.
Exactly. And that's the problem where, you know, it's going to be tough to be able to make all of these moves, especially when you're moving off of a head coach, to figure out everything in one off season, which is, and it's going to be very, I don't think it's going to be impossible. However, I do think it is going to be a tough task to be able to do that. And if they take their time with this head coaching hire, that's where it's going to get a little bit interesting, and where you're probably going to be able to see them run it back with this team next year. And I think it's going to be very frustrating if they do, because again, like I said, I don't necessarily think that's the right decision. I think it's more fits the narrative of a Cleveland-based team, because you don't necessarily want to go back into the missing the playoffs, not good enough, like those types of teams. And maybe they are a little bit worried if they do move off of some guys and they make this big overhaul that may not work out like that. That could be the potential. And then if you do start to lose that, then Donovan Mitchell wants to be out. Then other guys want to be out. Like, it's going to be tough. So I don't necessarily think that it would be the right decision to run it back with this squad. However, you're going to have to move pretty quickly in order to get stuff going if that's the case. Because, like I said, there's a very limited market for Darius Garland. And I think that's probably going to be the one guy that I think should be moved off of. I think you could make it work with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen both on the roster. But overall, like, the market for him is very, very small, and you got to act quick with it.
And don't forget the fact that we're also talking about a really small coaching pool this offseason too.
Exactly. Like, that's the other thing too.
And they already said, hey, we're going to take this weekend off, kind of cool down, and then we'll pick things up Tuesday or whatever they said it was going to be, and start looking for a head coach. Sorry to break it to you, you are on the brink of making an NBA finals, of putting together a roster that can make an NBA finals, and your entire season is on the line on who you hire this head coach. We've seen that. JB Bickerstaff didn't get it done. You were nowhere close to making a finals, right? This team, even healthy, I don't think was competing with Boston. So much rides on this. I don't think you have the time to take a weekend off. And I get this is the guy's job, just like it's anybody else's job. And hey, you know, they just worked a really long, hard season. Maybe they should get a bit of a vacation. But also, sometimes you got to put in overtime hours when things aren't going the greatest.
Well, and that's
a weird situation.
That's the other thing, too. You know, we talk about these players getting bunch of contracts and you shouldn't be like hating on him and stuff, blah, blah, blah. The other thing that I would say about that too, you get that contract based off of your work. You're getting paid X amount of money because we know that you're in a high stress situation. Like that, like you got to be able to put in the long hours. So in my opinion, you have to be able to just not take a weekend off and just deal with it. Because again, like you, like I said, you have a very short timeline right now. And if you're not executing every moment, you could potentially slip up and screw up.
Yeah, I would be to the point where James Brega would be in my office. I would have Kenny Atkinson in my office. Those two guys have nothing left to do. They're in the offseason just like we are. Sam Cassell, if that's a guy you want to interview, you're going to have to wait until the season's over, right? Like, he's sitting with the Celtics. I get that. If you don't want to make the head coaching hire before the end of the finals, I don't think that's a problem whatsoever. I don't think you have to have a guy in there before the finals is over. But as soon as that's over, I'd have Sam Cassell in my office. I'd interview him. I'd say, is he on par with candidate number one out of the non-guys that are, you know, still active in the NBA right now in terms of coaching a team like Sam Cassell? Our number one guy, is Sam Cassell better than him? Is he competing with him? No. Hire guy number one.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. I want to get to some of these other comments, too. I don't think these are going to take nearly as long. I'm going to kind of group these next two together. Because to me, it seems like Kobe kind of protecting his players and in defending his statement that we just talked about, the not making the changes. He's trying to make sure things stay level and also maybe protecting himself a little bit. So coming to the players, I think he's protecting Jared Allen because they're now saying that the injury for Allen is a rib fracture and that there was no chance he was physically going to be able to play. When everything before, they're telling us, oh, you know, cortisone shot, he could have taken it. He didn't even give it a try. And now all of a sudden, now we can see the fracture in the rib now that the season's over and he would have never been able to go anyway.
I think also on top of that, too, is the fact that you don't really want to reveal that information whenever you're in the heart of a big time series and stuff. Like, it kind of makes sense. I also think, too,
like from a strategic standpoint, it makes sense. But also leaving your fans in the dark and making them kind of gang up on Jared Allen isn't a great thing.
Sometimes you have to, though. Sometimes you have to. You have to be able to cover up that information in order to make sure that you don't know what the Celtics are going to be able to do. Like, I'm sorry. That's just how it is. You're going to have to do that. And I think also on top of that, too, is in terms of how we've seen this kind of play out beforehand, my mom always says, don't burn bridges. As best as you can, do not burn any bridges. In one case, you totally burnt a bridge with Baker Mayfield. Like, I know it's a different sport. I get it. But that's definitely a life lesson that you need to be able to take back from. Because you were, in one way, you could say, you were forced to pay Deshaun Watson all that money. Like, there is, if you want to really think about it, because Baker Mayfield was going to be gone. Yeah, no matter what.
Realistically, Deshaun was like out of the running in Cleveland. And then the money came on the table and he was back, right?
Exactly. So I think this is a case where if you go out there and you're not defending your guys right now in these press conferences, it makes a ton of sense. Because if you want Jared Allen back and you're not sticking up for him, it's going to create more drama and tension between the general manager and the upper management and Jared Allen. And you don't want that. So being able to stick up for a guy like Jared Allen, I think it's totally okay. You need to be able to do that, especially if you're going to keep him around. Now, however, if he, and also too, with a positive that you could take away from this as well is, yeah, maybe he didn't play too well. And like the narratives were spinning around that he doesn't like, you know, maybe his character and stuff like that, not wanting to play and stuff. It kind of helps if you're going to potentially move off of Jared Allen as well to be able and say like, listen, he was dealing with an injury. That's why he wasn't playing. However, when he was healthy, this is what he has done. And I think it's a very smart move to be able to come out and say that he was hurt, he couldn't play, because it benefits Jared Allen, it benefits a trade suitor, it benefits the future for the Cavaliers as well. I'm totally for it.
I guess it would benefit in terms of trade. And if you're going to keep him around, it's the right move. If you're going to move off a guy, I don't care that you burn a bridge. Like, if you're already done with him, in professional sports, it's a business. You're either there or you're not. And if you're not working for us, you're working against us. It's that simple. And a guy like Jared Allen's not going to go somewhere else and then come back to Cleveland. If you like, there's no possibility of that. And even if there was, it's not like he'd be a star coming back. It wouldn't be in 2 years. He'd be like, that was actually kind of fun over there when all the guys berated me because I said the lights were too bright and that I wouldn't play my game and that I was, you know, a baby back bitch. It's not like, hey, get me back in there. I loved it. No, it's not going to be like that. So I don't care about burning the bridge so much. But in terms of if you're going to keep him, I get it. You protect the guy. I'm fine with that. If you're looking to trade him, you probably want to do that too. You don't want teams to even be questioning whether or not Jared Allen could be soft.
Yeah. And again, too, you know, you don't know if you're going to be able to find someone for him. That's the other thing.
Right.
You could potentially be stuck with him. So if you are stuck with him, then you don't want to have to deal with that. You know, maybe you want to get rid of him and you're trying everything in your power to get him off your table, but it's just nothing's happening. So you have to be able to keep that connection. I think, you know, I praise Andrew Berry a ton. And I think that he is one of the best GMs right now in the NFL. That was one move where I felt that he kind of screwed up, and also Haslam and everything else, Kevin Stefanski, they really kind of fumbled the bag with that one. And ultimately, I think it was just a very tough situation overall there. So I think that in the long term, this will definitely pay off for the Cavs.
Yeah, this one, I don't even know that we need to go into. This is just kind of like a no shit moment. Did we get away from unlocking his potential fully? I think we did this year. I think that needs to be a focal point this summer. That's Kobe Altman talking about Evan Mobley.
Yeah, like, no shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's injured. You said he was going to develop an outside shot all offseason. We didn't see that develop until he came back from his injury. And even then, he looked pretty uncomfortable taking it for a majority of the year. I think he settled into it a little bit. And we saw him knock down a pretty good amount. I don't think he was a bad three-point shooter when he was open. But it's not like that was a big part of his game this year either. Everywhere we saw him be dominant was inside.
It's just podium talk, too. Like, you got to be able to say that kind of stuff. Obviously, you know, want to... I'm not really taking that to heart. Like, that's, again, a no-shit moment.
Yeah, our 22-year-old star that we need to be a superstar in this league in order to win a title. Yeah, he didn't play that great this year.
It's just a reporter fishing for something to be able to make a story off of, which I don't think is a bad thing. It's just it at least helps the story out. So I don't think it's necessarily a big thing there.
No, again, I think that's kind of just like
how the business is kind of thing.
Yeah. The last one I want to get to, we touched on a little bit, but I don't know that we fully went into it. Kobe Altman was asked whether or not the team would consider breaking up the duo of Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. And he said, I don't see why we should. I'm going to try to refrain from going on the same rant that I did a little bit earlier. These two haven't worked together. That's why you should. I don't think that's even the correct response of, I don't see why we should, because both guys are less efficient when they're on the court together.
Well, in a way though, I think it's more of...
I think I know what he was trying to say, right?
He's trying to say because it's two top guards in the league.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense. But you got to be able to consider, hey, can they play together? No. Can you send one of them to the bench? No. There's no way that I don't think Darius Garland takes on a bench role. He's currently going to be in his prime kind of thing. Like, there's no way that I'm... If I was Darius Garland, I would be, fuck no, I ain't going to the bench. Like, come on.
You gave him a max contract for a reason, did you not?
Exactly. And I think that's just kind of him saying, one, you know, as much as we're going to try everything to be able to make this work out and try to find something, but also too, again, it helps trying to promote the idea of moving off of one of them and creating this smokescreen of, listen, we want to try to make this work out. We don't necessarily want to give up Darius Garland. However, if you give us the right price, we're able to do it, kind of thing. So I'm not going to look too heavily into it. I think it's a lot of smoke. There's going to be a lot of smoke for the next couple of months with this team. It's just how it is. And you're going to just have to deal with it. And you're going to have to search through the quotes and realize that, listen, we're not going to 100% know what's going to happen here. You know, a lot of narratives are going to be creative. And ultimately, the final say is going to be when we get the notification saying so-and-so has been traded to wherever. So I don't know. I mean, you could say all you want at the podium, and eventually it's going to, you're going to see if it's the truth or not pretty soon.
Yeah, I would have even liked to have just heard a, hey, listen, we get they didn't look great on the court together. We don't think that means that they can't look great on the court together in the future. We can't find the right person to put in a place where these two guys maybe look a little bit better when they match. I'd like something more than I don't see why we should, because I certainly see why we should.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. But yeah,
I don't think that would ruin anything like trade talks either. If you're hey, they haven't, it's just simply a better answer.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody can see why you should maybe move off of them. Like maybe why Donovan shouldn't be, or excuse me, why Darius shouldn't be here. Because he sucks when he's not had the ball in his hands. He's been awful. Even when he did have the ball in his hands, like at game 5 against the Celtics, the dude shot like 4 of 17. It was awful. I think a lot of people can see why maybe you should move off of Darius Garland. So I think I would have appreciated a better answer there, but we didn't get one. We're not going to get one. Kobe Altman's not going to talk again, and we're not going to know anything until probably the Cavs hire a new coach, and that probably won't be until after the NBA Finals. So let's change things up. Let's get into the Guardians, because the Guardians are on a bit of a tear. They're continuing to dominate while they're at home. This team just keeps rattling off wins as we record this on Friday, prior to their Friday night game against the Angels. You guys will be listening to this, of course, Saturday morning. So either the win streak will be over or it'll be up to 7 games because they've swept back-to-back series now. I do want to start with that Mets series, though, that we just got out of. You sweep the New York Mets. Francisco Lindor doesn't look particularly good. And Andrés Giménez essentially delivers 2 daggers within that series. I mean, he essentially blows them up twice. And of course, Giménez, a part of the Lindor deal in order to send him over to the Mets. Giménez was something Cleveland got back. Is it safe to say that that deal now is in full favor of Cleveland? Getting rid of Francisco Lindor, money aside, Cleveland still wins.
Yeah, I think this was Cleveland winning it no matter what. When you get rid of it, any type of trade in any sort of league, whenever you can get rid of one player and get a return of a lot of other things, usually results in something like you usually tend to win it. Obviously, it gets kind of tough if it's like a draft pick or, you know, if certain things you got to be able to hit on those guys. But at the same time, too, being able to get a guy like Andrés Giménez and figure out that second base role for the long run, it was very significant in my opinion, because then that trade gave you the ability to go out and re-sign and extend Jose Ramirez. So you locked up your third baseman as well. The only issue is now you're still trying to figure out the shortstop position. I get it. But if you did end up keeping Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez left, you're not going to be able to figure out the third base spot. The second base spot becomes iffy, but hey, you got a shortstop. So ultimately, I think that
you would also have a shortstop who's hitting 190 right now. So
but I don't necessarily know.
Again, yeah, you can't correlate 1-to-1, right? But hypothetically, exactly. In his career right now, he'd be hitting 190.
Well, and I also think too, in terms of just how New York media is, like, it's tough to be able to step in there and play. for the New York Mets, in my opinion. Yeah,
you remember when they were throwing the thumbs down at their own fans because they were getting booed at their own home stadium?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's absurd. So I think we won the trade, but I don't think it's necessarily we should be like booing him or anything. I'm not rubbing it in Francisco Lindor's face. I'm very grateful for him in all this time with the Guardians and Indians because I believe he was never part of the Guardians.
No, Lindor was never a Guardian. Yeah. No, he was gone before that.
So I'm not at all upset about everything with that. I was happy to see him back in Cleveland. I didn't get to go see any of the games, but either way, it was still cool to see him back in Cleveland. Either way, though, yeah, obviously you win it. I just don't think you should be, you know, blasting New York for it and just be like, yeah, screw you guys, we won. Like, who cares? Focus on yourself. It's like a breakup, you know? Just move on.
Well, I think the team did a very good job of focusing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, their post was hilarious. Like, it was great, and it was memorable. Like, perfect, I think, especially starting it off with his first hit and how he absolutely pithed it. Yeah. Yeah, it was perfect. I think the team handled it well. I think the fans and the media was a little bit touching. That one was just a whole different thing, in my opinion. I think there was a lot of false narratives being spun. So overall, though, I think the team handled it pretty well.
I will say, though, I do fully enjoy any time that a New York fan goes into a complete spiral and loses their mind and we get to break them. Dylan may or may not find a way to put this clip in, but Frank the Tank, I don't know if you saw that one, but absolutely incredible. Like, Frank's an overreactor. We all know that, Frank with Barstool, but like that was just something to see. Like, that was, it felt like the reaction of most New York fans watching that series, especially because of what we just talked about, the Andrés Giménez dagger in those two games. Like, he hit the 3-run shot. He contributed very well in game 2 in that series as well. Those ones just, it feels like it hurts a little extra when you're like, we got the star, but somehow they ended up with a better player.
Yeah, no, I got to, well, if I want to put in the clip, I got to figure out the copyright issue because YouTube's pretty strict with that. But yeah, that is pretty funny. I also love watching Frank the Tank videos. I think they're hilarious. So yeah, seeing that one because of the Guardians was a little, it stuck a little bit to me.
Yeah, even if you don't get the whole like minute long thing in there, I'm sure you can slip in.
I'll figure it out. Sure, yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, and we'll probably get a strike on our first post. It'll be fine.
Yeah, why not?
I do want to talk about this bullpen though as well. Top bullpen again coming into Friday night against the Angels. An ERA of 2.52 for this bullpen, and there's been so many guys that have taken a step forward that you just didn't expect to. One, you're down Eli Morgan right now, who is a guy that was entering sort of your setup man role. I know coming in with Stephen Vogt, he really didn't assign any roles to his relievers other than obviously Class A being your full-time closer.
But he was kind of looking to be that guy. Like he was stepping up early in the season.
Yeah, like late in scenarios, it seemed like Morgan, when the game was close and the game was getting late, he would step in the seventh or eighth inning and sort of be expected to shut things down. He's been hurt, but you've seen other guys step up in his place. I mean, Hunter Gaddis has been absolute fireball. He had a little bit of a bumpy road in, you know, a few of his last outings. I know his last one was really good against the Mets on, I think it was Sunday or Wednesday. But overall, I mean, the guy's been electric. I mean, his first like 14 innings were scoreless. He's great coming out of the bullpen. I think transitioning him in there was an incredible move. He's throwing gas. Basically, all he's throwing is gas. Guys still can't touch it. You look at some of the other guys. Cade Smith has started stepping into a role too. Austin Hedges was just talking after their last game saying, hey, like, this kid's pretty good. And sure, he hits 97 on his fastball, but it really looks like it's coming in at 102. That's a good thing to hear. Colase has been great. His ERA is well under 1. And then Nick Sandlin might be the biggest surprise of this entire bullpen. His role right now is basically step in when things have hit the fan. When you are up shit creek without a paddle, Nick Sandlin, get in the boat. And he just manages to work out of it every single time. Like, there's guys like that who will have a low ERA and it's just because they're not giving up their own runs. No, Nick Sandlin has been that guy. He's not giving up runs, period.
Yeah, and if you look at past teams with the Guardians, a lot of it was the main issues, obviously, like last year, the bats, we know that. However, the bullpen has always been something that the Guardians necessarily couldn't figure out. Like, you always had good starting pitching. No matter what, it seems like this team just, I still cannot believe how incredible they do in terms of starting pitching. They just pull them out of their ass like it's nothing. Like, it's absurd. But in terms of the bullpen, it always is sort of sketchy. You know, they had to go out and, you know, I'm going very much in the past, but like they had to go out and get Andrew Miller. They had to go out and get, you know, Classe, even for that sense. But now you got guys like Hunter Gaddis stepping up. Huge. Like, I mean, he's up helping your bank account too, actually. I should say that.
Dude, he's more than helping my bank account. Pitch speed, Hunter Gaddis is a cheat code. Like an absolute cheat code. The dude only throws gas. Sure, he's going to hit the under a couple of times, but if you just slam the over, listen, they're probably going to take it off the books at this point when Hunter Gaddis is coming in. Yeah, me talking this, yeah. I mean, I'm just slamming it every time the guy's in the game. I don't even have to be there. I might still be hitting it when I'm sitting at home on my couch. I'm not even seeing the pitches in real time, and I still might be hitting it.
Yeah, and it's huge having Hunter Gaddis. And then Nick Sandlin, I was a little bit concerned with them. There was some patches there where I was like, you know, maybe, because that was more towards like the beginning of the season. But now he's stepped up huge for them. You know, obviously Kate Smith as well, like you touched on. Absolutely incredible job by the whole bullpen. And that really just kind of brings up the fact that like this team is starting to grow a little bit differently from years past, in my opinion. Because again, there was always these few holes and stuff. Yes, the hitting is still kind of sketch here and there. You still, you know, you got to figure out, try to get Kwan back. For the love of God, just please get him healthy and back for the rest of the year. That's all I care for.
Shout out Tyler Freeman, though, filling in the leadoff spot right now.
He's doing pretty well, yeah.
Insane.
And that was one guy that I figured that it would probably have to step up into that role. But this team is starting to really develop into something that could be very good. Especially to your, like I've said before, the AL Central is... It's usually just a garbage can. Like, it's not that good. You know, obviously the Twins right now, they're probably the only competition you necessarily have.
The Royals are on an absolute tear. I don't know what's happening over there.
But they're so streaky, you never know with the Royals.
I want them to eventually, and I want to say that they're eventually going to fall off and they're going to hit that road because nobody expected them to be as good as they are this year. But they've been putting it together just as long as the Guardians have, who kind of had similar expectations. Maybe a little higher, but similar expectations.
I agree. But overall, I mean, it's just a very good sign for this organization, especially too, because we always talked about, okay, maybe they should be just focusing on the future and stuff. But then be able to honestly start to focus on the future by bringing in younger guys and having them develop while winning, it's huge.
Yeah, they're doing an incredible balancing act right now. And I don't know if you're going to be able to keep it up entirely of win and develop at the same time, but they're finding a way to do it as we stand. Yeah. And the question might be when the wheels fall off for the Guardians at some point, or, you know, if maybe they're peaking a little bit too early, but we'll see. Cause crazy to think that the right move for this team might've actually been moving off of Tito Francona. Like, it wasn't even on your own terms, and I'm not going to bash Tito because I think Tito was great. He put you in great situations every single year that he was here. He competed. He was able to put together a winning roster, but I need to see it from a full season for Vogt, no doubt. But right now, like, Steven Vogt has his team playing better than Tito did, I think, flat out.
Yeah, I think it's obviously a little bit too
early, for sure. Yeah.
But... I think it's just a case of getting a fresh new face in there and being able to get a guy that, you know, obviously doesn't necessarily have a high resume or anything like that, but a fresh face, a new kind of era of, I guess, mindset. I think it's huge. You know, there was definitely some things. I love Tito to death. I think he's one of my favorite Cleveland coaches of all time in any sports. So but at the same time too, you know, adapt or die, Darwinism. You got to be able to change up your philosophies to be able to keep up with the game. And I think part of it too is, you know, Tito having to deal with health issues as well. It was tough for him. So I'm glad that Steven Vogt is doing a very good job. I hope he continues with it. He seems on and off the field like a great person. So I'm happy. And I'm really hoping that this continues, because going from a transition of Tito Francona to Steven Vogt, and if it does pan out with Steven Vogt, I mean, it's very smooth.
Yeah, no way around it. I think Vogt has done a tremendous guy. He's made the bullpen work. Players are just all out playing hard, just like they did for Tito. And also, I think a big change in this is the way that they swing the bat. I think Tito is a very contact-driven coach of, hey, you guys got to make sure when we're going, we're just touching the ball. Anytime you can put it in play is a good thing. Whereas Vogt's kind of transitioned into that, hey, we're not going to be the power-hitting team. We know we're not those guys. But you guys can still take good hacks, right? Like, swinging and missing in today's MLB is still a good thing. Every statistic will back that up. If you have the right launch angle, you're trying to get exit velocity and try to smack the ball hard instead of just touch it, you're going to end up with more runs at the end of the game. And that's just what they've done. So,
thing is, like, you have the capability, like all MLB players, I don't care if you, they have the ability to hit a home run,
right?
Like, if they were not that strong and they didn't have the capability, they wouldn't be able to play in the league. You have to have the capability to hit a home run. Now, is it different approaches and how you swing and everything like that? Like, that all varies. Obviously, you have guys like Steven Kwan, who not a home run machine. However, he has shown to be able to hit a home run, and he knows what his role is. So it makes a ton of, like, it's just being able to balance that philosophy of what your role is, how you should be approaching the at-bat. And that's one of the big things that I really liked about Steven Vogt coming in, was being able to have that background of a baseball player in sort of this modern-esque era of hitting the long ball. Like, it helps to be able to have someone to step in and say, hey, this is what you should be doing. This is how you should attack it, kind of thing. And I think it's just, again, a fresh face in there. That helps a ton.
Yeah, and I like to see it again, not to blow up, like, the culture of, hey, you play hard and you still want to put the ball in play, right? Like, we know we're not going to hit home runs. We get that. We're not going to be the league leader home run team, but we're still going to go out and pound the ball, and we're going to hit a few here and there. It's not going to be, you know, Miles Straw playing center field. We're not going to roll that back out.
Speaking of.
What about?
Well, there's another guy that kind of had the, it was like the Miles Straw recently for us.
Oh, are you referring to our good friend Ramon Laureano?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ramon Laureano's been designated for assignment. He's gone. I guess he's not gone. I don't think anybody claimed him, at least as it stands right now, because shocker, the guy's hitting like 130. And he can't touch a fastball, and he was on roids before that, and he is getting old, and crazy how those things work. But he's been DFA'd. They call up Jonathan Rodriguez, somebody that when I was in Lake County, I got to cover as well. I mean, a few of these guys down the team, but J-Rod's the first hitter of the kind. He's a swing and miss guy. There's no doubt about it. He's going to go out there and he's going to pound the ball. He's also going to ground out a fair share of times. This means if there's a runner on first, you can kind of shiver in your boots a little bit, because there might be a double play coming. He's got ground ball problems. He's got swing and miss problems, but he's also got hell of a pop in his bat. And he's got a cannon in right field. He's not the like most elite defender in the world. I'm not going to tell you that, but he has a cannon. Like, this guy can throw a nuke from the outfield. So he's coming up. We haven't really seen too much from him up to this point. We did see, though, Wednesday against the Mets, he delivered his first hit, got his first RBI, and it was a go-ahead RBI in order to put the Guardians up 4-3 over the Mets. So that was at least good to see. And honestly, I don't think he can be any worse than Ramon Laureano was, right?
Well, and also too, you got to think about it. You're not having them step into a huge role. Obviously, with Kwan down, it's hard for now. However, if you do, you know, keep them up with the team, you will have Kwan, you have Freeman, you have Will Brennan, who's been absolutely stepping up huge. You also have Estevan Flore, who's starting to come around a little bit. Like, there's a lot of depth with this outfield right now that you don't necessarily have to be able to say, like, hey, we need you to start basically 3 out of 4 games of the series, 2 out of 3 games of the series. Like, that's not going to be the case with him. He doesn't have to do that. So I think it's kind of nice. You're in a nice spot where you're like, listen, if you want to give a break to one of your guys, throw him in the lineup, maybe DH him for a day. I know you got Fry usually. Like, it's just, it's kind of that platoon mindset that we've seen before. It's just, it's good to have a younger guy be able to take some reps in those cases when you want to give some of your star guys a day off. So I'm all for it. I'm all for designating Ramon Laureano. Like, that was just, I still don't understand why he was even with the squad beforehand. Like, it just,
dude, they signed him to a $5 million contract this offseason. That blew my mind.
Like, what's the point?
Yeah, well, what are we doing?
You already knew that you were going to start to transition Tyler Freeman into the outfield. You already knew that Will Brennan was probably going to be the better option out there. You had Stephen Kwan. What were you thinking?
He wasn't awful last year. I just don't think, again, you pay $5 million to an older guy. Especially just
like, he's good for last year. That's great. But moving forward,
to put it nicely, the Guardians are very financially conscious. And $5 million ain't cheap.
You've seen that with so many guys like Mike Zunino. Like, I know there's been you can make a case for that one. I get it because you didn't know with Bo Naylor. But also, too, like Miles Straw. Like, what? Why are you? Why?
They seem a little quick to fire. They're quick to fire on paying guys contracts.
Stop throwing money at these veterans that have these offshoot years and you're relying on them to step up huge when you have younger guys that can easily step into that role and have probably at least close to the same production. Like, stop. It's not that fucking hard, people. Like, I don't get it. No, it's so annoying.
You gotta wait.
Again, Zunino was the offshoot one where it was. I get it because Naylor being called up in the sense. However, still though, you had like David Fry. Like, that was,
speaking of David Fry, by the way, by the beginning of May here, he's leading the MLB in average. He's second in OPS. Why isn't this guy in the lineup every day?
I don't know.
He's getting a little bit more play time, but this guy should be an everyday lineup guy. Whether he's playing first, he's DHing, he can play third, he can catch. Get the man in the lineup.
He can play outfield, too.
He can play outfield. He can play the corners.
And he's more than okay to play those roles.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to be like, you know, you don't have to stick him out into, you're worried like a game. Like, I'm thinking like an Arias situation where if you put him in too many positions, like, it could potentially like screw with them kind of thing. Like, it's not necessarily that. It's more of, like, he can play wherever. Just stick him in the lineup. Like, why aren't we having him DH like all the time?
Yeah,
it's my thing. Tell you.
It blows my mind. I think it's part of, it's kind of right now trying to get Kyle Manzardo's work in, because,
which I get. Yes,
they want to see him succeed. But again, with how many places Fry can play, the guy
you have
should
an
be
open
finding
spot in that. Like, you could put him out in the outfield right now. I would have him over Estevan Floria. Like, yeah, I don't know if I wouldn't say that he should be playing left field, but right field, I would stick him out there.
Yeah, I mean, then you're probably putting a guy like Jonathan Rodriguez or
Will Brennan.
Will Brennan left, yeah.
I'm fine with that. Will Brennan has played left field.
Yeah, they can figure it out.
I just don't get it. And then you can have even Naylor take a day off, Bo Naylor too.
Yep.
I
don't get it. I think David Fry should be in the lineup no matter what at this point. I think he's proven that. And until he cools off, that should be the case.
Exactly.
Last thing here to cover for the Guardians. Carlos Carrasco goes to the IL. He's got neck spasms. They bring on Xavion Curry. Curry looked like he was having a pretty good start, and then things flew off the rails pretty quickly, and his only time out. Is this, though, a move that you'd like to see kind of stay in place? Are we kind of over the cookie experiment, at least as it comes to starting rotation?
Yeah, I think so. I really think that the time was over with that one. As much as I love the Cookie Carrasco story and whatever, everything that he's done for the organization.
Yeah, of course. I mean, in the whole, like, the story in general, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
Carlos Carrasco, he gets diagnosed with cancer. He goes out, he beats it, he comes back. He obviously played a massive role for the Guardians in the World Series run and some time before that. He's one of the best pitchers that they've ever had, especially in the last couple decades.
And that's the problem, though, is you have so many pitchers and starting pitchers that will be able to step up for this team that you don't necessarily need to have Carlos Carrasco. So, especially Gavin Williams coming back soon.
Right, like by the time Cookie's healthy, Gavin might be back. And then it might not be Curry or Carrasco on the roster because Ben Lively's kind of pitching out of his mind at the moment.
Right, and I'm at that point, I would rather have Curry than Carrasco because Curry, I think, has a little bit more potential that you can tap into rather than Carrasco. I think it's time.
I think people can definitely deduce just by listening to earlier episodes. We're a play 'em and figure it out kind of group. So if you got a young guy like Curry who's going to put up close to the same numbers as Carrasco, guess what? If he goes out there and gets torched, okay, now we know.
Who cares?
Now we know. All right, we can either go back to Carrasco or throw the next guy in line up there.
Welcome to Columbus, Jake always says.
Welcome to Columbus. That's a classic one. Before we get out of here, want to talk about some Browns because OTAs have gone. And I think they've come and passed at this point, at least the first set of them.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was just the 3 days, like the 21st to the 23rd. Main thing, obviously, coming out of this, we learned that Deshaun Watson is throwing every other day. So my main thing here, this is kind of how I want to break it down. We know the Browns are very close to the chest. They're not afraid to essentially lie straight to our faces in order to, you know, for their own personal benefit. Which, like it or not like it, it's what they're going to do.
That's business.
Yeah, that's the way they're going to handle things. Is this coincidence or specific planning by the Cleveland Browns? Deshaun Watson throws on the 21st. Throws on the 21st. Media's there the 22nd. He doesn't throw. He throws again on the 23rd when media's not there. Do you think that's coincidence or, like, hey, he was throwing every other day and that's just the way that it fell? Or is this maybe a, we can stop anybody from seeing what he actually looks like at the moment?
I mean,
because they put out the video of him throwing, but these are like, you know, the slow-mo. You can't tell how much velo's on the ball. It's cut up, it's chopped up, whatever. Whereas if Mary Kay Cabot, Daryl Ryder, and whoever the hell else you want to throw out there is sitting there taping it, you're going to see the live throw.
Yeah. Well, and I think there was a couple of, I thought I saw some media of him potentially throwing. I could be wrong.
I want to say it was just the video the Browns put out.
It probably was just that. You know, I don't think it's really like some big mystery kind of thing and hiding it from the media. You're coming back from an injury. You're trying to take it slow. You don't want to re-injure anything in that sense. I don't think I'm going to be looking into this too much. I think it's just a case of, it's just how it is. You know, you got 3 day period there. And you want to maximize all the days from him throwing, obviously you're not going to have him go one day when the media is throwing because you don't want to have to designate that purposely for the media. Like,
right, no, would just of course not. No, no, no.
Then you just eliminate a day. So yeah. I'm okay with it. Like, I don't think it was anything that big of a deal or anything like that.
I'm not concerned now. If we go next week and we don't see Deshaun Watson throw again, right? They only give the media access to days where he's not throwing, then I'm getting concerned because they have their second set of OTAs. If we get to there, I'm not saying I'm like you know, go full up in arms, but I'm getting concerned at that point.
But what's the time frame for that second OTAs? Do you know? Is it a 3-day period?
It's 3 or 4 days.
If it's I don't think it's necessarily trying to plan around it. Like one and the other thing is too, like
May 28th through the 30th, so another three.
You don't want to have to plan around your schedule.
But hear me out here. Give media access to the other day. You don't have to change Deshaun's schedule.
But at the same time, too,
see Deshaun throw.
The other thing that I have to say is this. The dude's already going to have to deal with so much media pressure as well. Like, I just don't want to have to, because every time that a post gets, every time there's something on Twitter about Deshaun throwing or a clip of him, it's just a firestorm. You either got people, you know, praising it, obviously, or you got other people just saying, like, this dude sucks. Like, there's going to be so much pressure on him already. And then just to add on more with OTAs, like, I just can't, I don't care. Just let the dude throw, like, it.
Sorry to break it to you, but the pressure is going to be there no matter what.
I get it. I understand that.
Whether or not Cleveland media is there taking a video of the guy throwing the football or not, like, you're playing Dak Prescott week one against the Cowboys, 425 slot with Tom Brady on the call.
But if you have an opportunity to limit it as much as you can, you take that opportunity. I'm sorry. Like, I don't want to just apply more pressure in OTAs on Deshaun Watson. And I know that it's going to be just an absolute firestorm week one, especially if he goes out there and lays an egg. Like, it's just going to be an absolute shit show. I get it. But at the same time, you got to be able to try to limit that as much as you can, because you know it's going to be tough for him.
Yeah. You can take it slow with him. You can not take it slow. I just want to see an actual video of Deshaun Watson throwing the football, and I want to see where he's at in his rehab. I want to see if the ball looks the same.
I would love to, too.
Yeah, I think to a degree, as fans, we kind of deserve that, right? We kind of deserve to know where our quarterback's standing. I don't know if I'm going to be having Jameis Winston or Tyler Huntley in week one of my NFL football game against the Cowboys. I'd like to know where my quarterback kind of stands, and we're not getting any Deshaun availability. They're basically dancing around us just saying, Deshaun looks like himself. I can almost guarantee you Deshaun does not currently look like himself throwing the football. I would hope not, or else he wouldn't be throwing every other day. If he looked like himself, he'd be throwing every day.
Well, and also, too, again, you got to ease him back into the process.
No, of course. No. Like, so, like, they're filing the medical advice. That's fine, as you 100% should. I'm just saying, if he did look like himself throwing the football, he'd probably be to a point where he's throwing every single day. You have to imagine the ball doesn't look that great if he's on an every other day program. Right? Like, the shoulder's probably not where it needs to be.
Who knows?
In addition to that, defense sounded pretty hungry. They were all talking about being better than they were last year in certain aspects. I know MJ Emerson specifically mentioned the red zone defense. They felt like they were really good up until that point, and then they were like 26th in the NFL, and they weren't settling. They're ready to make massive improvements, so I think that's good to hear. That kind of wraps up everything we have to talk. Cleveland aspect, I do want to get this in here, because this is an absolutely insane. If you've been keeping up with the Scottie Scheffler arrest stuff,
yeah, dude, that was wild.
So, for anybody that didn't know, one, get out from under the rock. Go ahead, go live if you didn't see this, because I don't watch golf, you know, every single weekend. I'm tuning in mostly, you know, some Sundays, not even all of them. I know you're not like an avid golf watcher. Like,
I'm an avid golfer, but
yeah, not a golf watcher though. Like, you're not viewing the PGA.
I occasionally watch it though. Yeah,
exactly.
Not every the same weekend, way though.
Like, majors come up, I'll tune in for like the Masters or PGA Championship, stuff like that. This week is, I don't even remember the name of it's the some name challenge. I'm not tuned in for the golf event this week. Like, it's not going to happen. Maybe Sunday I'll tune in. Probably not, but maybe. Scottie Scheffler getting arrested was absolutely insane. Like, now we have the videos. He was charged with assaulting a police officer, which carries like a 10-year prison sentence. Reckless driving, criminal mischief, and avoiding or ignoring a traffic signal by a police officer. Like, the dude's got four charges against him. He gets put in jail. He has to warm up in his jail cell before he's eventually released and then go makes it tee time for day two of the PGA Championship. And then we get the video. Dude, he casually, slowly turns into the parking lot. The cop sprints up to him, smacks on his windshield. They basically drag him out and throw him in handcuffs. And there's a reporter right there the whole time. Like, this is an awful look for the city of Louisville. And somehow is going to have everyone like Scottie Scheffler more than they already do.
Dude, I mean, I think it's also too absolutely crazy to consider that the dude after day two was still leading the pack. Like, that's absurd. Be like, throwing in, get thrown in jail and then go out there and be able to just ball out.
Like, I don't think he was in first, but he was sitting right up at the top of the competition.
I
think he ended up playing a bad Saturday and then like a pretty good Sunday, and he finished, you know, not at the top, but somewhere around it. But like, the top 2 days, I think his best day shooting was the day he got put in jail.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's wild. Like, how do you, I don't know.
Scottie Scheffler, by the way, of all people, like the
goated,
like, squeaky, he's like a squeaky clean individual though. Like, there's nothing negative.
Dude,
to say
he was
about
just
Scottie
trying
Scheffler.
To go to his tee time. Like, he's trying to warm up. Like, oh my God.
This is the same guy who said he would have left the Masters if his child was being born.
Here's the good thing. Here's the thing. This type of stuff, and I know this is going to sound a little bit bad, but this type of like publicity for golf has really been helping them out. Because if you think about it, golf, you know, Tiger Woods era, that one kind of it was good for the sport and stuff, bringing together a lot more of the younger culture. But it was also kind of tough after that kind of era where, you know, Tiger starts to fall off a little bit and stuff. And now you got these guys. Obviously, it's not good when you get thrown in jail. However, like, the beef between, who was it, like, Brooks Koepka and...
Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah, like, awesome. Shit talking each other, perfect. We always talk about it, too, like... If there was like maybe like a walk-up song in golf, like, yeah, that'd be awesome.
That'd be
or
electric.
If you could just have like 2 minutes, like a hockey rule where it's just like 2 minutes of instigation, like just fucking start throwing haymakers at it. Like, this kind of stuff is just in a weird way, it's really good for the brand of golf. I know you don't want people getting thrown in jail, obviously.
Yeah, definitely not.
However, there are t-shirts now everywhere of Scottie Scheffler and his mugshot, which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah,
and I even considered purchasing it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredible. Love to see it. If I'm Scottie Scheffler, though, I'm hitting every counter suit in the book. Like,
Scott, 100%.
He's probably going to be the, I just want this whole thing to be behind me guy. I'm hitting every counter suit in the book.
Nope.
I'm getting for the first place prize because I didn't win and I had to get thrown into jail. Throw on like the personal stress one. I'll take you for wrongful arrest, and I'm sure there's something else we can toss in there, but like, I'm hitting you with the books.
Just call up Saul Goodman and he'd help you out with that one.
Yeah, with Scotty, he might have those connections with the way he's been playing. But dude,
might as well.
Even today, again, we're recording this on Friday morning, I looked at my phone and I just checked like the scores really quick. Dude, Scotty was like 5 under through like 9 holes after shooting 2 over yesterday. Like, all right, dude, chill out. Like, nobody cares about this event. Let somebody else go have some fun. Why are you even here?
I don't even know how golf is tough, man.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I'm awful tough at it, but it's pretty fun to watch. All right, let's wrap things up. We'll do our Cleveland. We're going to do hero and villain of the week. Dylan, I'll let you start it off, your Cleveland hero of the week.
I think it's pretty obvious, Andre Jimenez, because going out there slapping your former team in the face a little bit, telling them, you know, hey, look what you're missing. It's always a good thing. That's my hero.
Yeah, that's not too bad. My hero, maybe a little less so with the comments that he had today that we talked about, but I'll go Kobe Altman. Way to make the right decision. Way to get JB Bickerstaff out of the coaching spot for the Cavs. I think that was the right move. And just letting things sort of calm down. I'm happy with saying Kobe Altman finally made the first right move of this offseason for the Cavs. But Dylan, I will I'll go to your villain, your Cleveland villain of the week.
I think this one's pretty clear cut and dry. JB Bickerstaff. Adios. Good riddance there. We'll see you, buddy.
Yeah, that one's not too bad. I have two.
Go ahead.
Quick ones. Francisco Lindor is my Cleveland villain of the week. Not because he did anything bad, not because he should have been booed, but because he made me think about the 2016 World Series, which then sends me into a spiraling depression.
I cry every time I watch that Rajay Davis home run video. I cry. I shit you not. I literally kept watching it this week. And then also too, 2017, when Lindor hits that grand slam against the Yankees, one of the most electric moments ever in baseball, in my
period.
Opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely nuts. But yeah, I like game seven. I'm outside at the watch party, the rain delay. It just sends me into like a Vietnam flashback, and him being back in Progressive Field did just that. Thank you for being my personal villain, Francisco Lindor. Also, the sun. I don't know if you guys can tell right now, like I'm wearing a hoodie, but like I am like toasted. I don't even know if this will pick it up on the camera, and it's already worn off a little bit, but like I got toasted. I look at the weather and it's like overcast for the Wednesday baseball game. I'm like, cool. I can go watch in a t-shirt, no sunscreen. I get out there and the sun is beaming onto my skin the entire time.
You're just pasty as shit, dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm about as white as it gets. I can't really do anything about it.
Well, I golfed yesterday, and I got burnt, but I'm an Italian, so like...
Yeah, so it doesn't really count. You just tan.
I tan, so yeah. It's going to be fine here. Yeah,
like, I'm excited. I'll be as red as I am right now. Pulling up my sleeves physically hurt my arms.
And shower might be a bitch, but...
It was. Yeah, no, it wasn't good. And then... I'll probably be the same white when I come and, you know, it all settles down. It's all gone. I'll probably still be the same white.
Suck it.
There's your Cleveland heroes and villains of the week. And that about wraps things up for us. It good episode. I mean, we'll be back next week, hopefully talking to you, maybe all three sports. It's kind of how it rolls, right? Like, yeah. If there's Cavs news, we'll talk Cavs news. If not, we're not going to jam them down your throats and try to, you know, create some storyline. Like, this isn't sports talk radio where you got to talk something every single time. Like we get to pick the narrative, we get to go as deep or as shallow as we want into a subject. So we'll keep you up with what's actually happening. Like we'll probably talk some more Browns OTA stuff if we get any news coming out of there from the next 3 days. I'm sure if the Cavs make any moves, maybe we'll talk to you guys some NBA playoffs. Again, make sure you go check out our YouTube channel, Mistake by the Take. Want to make sure you get us there. At Mistake by the Take, I believe on Instagram. And
at TikTok. MBTT, yeah, and then at MBTT Pod on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it.
Yep, if you want to find me on X, it's at Jake Vol. I think you're still over at DY Felt, correct?
Correct, on Instagram and Twitter and X and TikTok or whatever, everything.
If you're going to find me on Instagram, which is probably a light less informative for you guys, but go ahead and go find me at Jake Volnick. But that's about where we're at. Ad puts a wrap on episode 32, and we'll see you guys next time. Hopefully next week, right around the same time that you're watching this, you'll be able to watch episode 33 if everything goes to plan. So with that, peace! Thank you.